You have study after study after study that just shows the science and the data of how the body can heal itself.
You know, we have a new body every year, every 7 years. We have a new skin every month, a new liver every 2-3 years, half of a new heart every 25 years, new muscles every 9 years. What happens is that you lose cells every day and your stem cells replace every day the cells that are being lost. Every year, it's kind of a little bit more in decline.
Generally.
The point is that there's a time in which there's not enough stem cells to offset cellular loss. What is cellular loss in your pancreas? It's diabetes.
Mm-hmm.
What is cellular loss in your brain cells making dopamine? It's Parkinson.
Mm-hmm.
Cellular loss in your heart, it's cardiomyopathy. Every single age-related disease is the consequence, the end result of a slow process of losing cells that are not replaced.
Christian Drapeau, stem cell scientist and herbalist. I don't think I could have manifested somebody more perfect to come on this podcast and merge the Eastern world and the Western world of medicine. You're also the founder of Stem Regen. I'm so excited to have you here today. Thank you
My
for being
pleasure.
Here.
My pleasure. Thank you.
So this podcast is all about becoming rooted in yourself, in your life, in your body, but also your inner wisdom to heal. So one of the opening questions that we typically ask people are, you know, what are the three things that help you feel more rooted in yourself, in your life, in your happiness, and why?
Okay. Probably the first one would be to say meditation.
Mm-hmm.
So to cut all the noise of the world, to be able to dive deeper into, you know, the essence of who we are, I think it makes you, it gives you so much more discernment during the rest of the day, to filter out all that noise. So for me, that's so, sort of a must in the morning. I've done this all my life, but I guess as I'm getting older, it's even more important, which is to stretch. I'm not talking about long sessions of yoga, just to stretch, and it just changes the rest of the day. It's amazing to me how little pulls right and left, your different joint, just changes your experience of your day.
Mm-hmm.
So just a little bit more freedom of movement. I would say these are like the two that come to mind
in terms of
like the must, the things that I must do. I'm very flexible. So whatever the day brings, I just flow with it. But I have to do those two.
Do you feel like stretching for you is an embodiment practice also? Like something I find getting older, we're more aware of the aches, the pains, the spots that trigger us. Do you find that you're easily, that you can come into your body because of that?
Like it may not be a direct answer to your question, but the pain is oftentimes what creates, you know, that distance.
Yeah.
And for me, it's almost like, I mean, I did a lot of martial arts when I was a teenager. I was North American champion of Taekwondo when I was much younger. And I remember in those days, I just loved the pain of the training. Like I almost was craving it to some extent. And so today it's more like, I dive into that pain. Like if I stretch and it's painful, it's almost like, okay, let's do it a little bit more. Let's get in a little bit more into it, knowing that there's no damage that is created. It's purely a signaling to the brain.
Yeah, yeah.
So sinking more in the body to just, and the whole exercise of realizing that pain is sort of the fear version of the body, you know?
Absolutely.
The body is warning you something problematic is there. But if you don't react to it and you just observe it, the pain is just like observing a bird flying. It's another event that is happening in your surrounding. And when I take it that way, it allows me to go so much deeper in it. And yeah, it makes you sink so much more in your body comfortably.
I love that. What a beautiful practice. And so interesting that that kind of was the baseline for your journey into something that would regenerate and repair the body.
Yeah.
I just think that that's the story is always amazing. So on the flip side, in my profession, I work with a lot of people who today, because of wellness booming, we talk about things that are uprooting them.
Mm-hmm.
And they might not even know that their actual wellness practices are uprooting them because they're so rigid. There's no flexibility. They just treat it like a checklist. They have to get it done. Are you aware? What are three things that make you feel uprooted in your life?
A few things I would say I would start with, which is a flip side of what we just talked about. You know, getting up in the morning and just seeing that the day is full of emails and people that we need to reach out to. Like the day starts and it just like puts you like 0-60 miles an hour in a few seconds.
Mm-hmm.
To really try to avoid going there so that we can, for a moment, for let's say 30 minutes to sit down and really be able to center. That I had to work quite a bit to just like not get sucked into that, mm-hmm. that momentum. So so sometimes days will call for it. But that, I would say if there's one thing here where I need to pay attention, it's that one. The other one that I've learned that has not been difficult for me, I've never been hungry. All my life in the morning, I'm not hungry. And if I'm in a setting that, like a social setting, and then people all go for breakfast and I go, I realize if I eat in the morning, and even more so if I eat carbs in the morning, it just changes my focus for the rest of the day. So for me, that's the one thing that I will not do, and I've learned not to to do, is that I don't eat in the morning, and if I eat, it's going to be like an avocado. And then that really preserves that focus during the day.
So that's fascinating, because a lot of people, even though there's that intuition around something like that, because media will tell us, or you know, current health practices or trends will tell us to do something otherwise. Is this something that you feel has it been easy for you to stick with? Has it been a ritual for you for a long time? Did you know inherently that it was going to benefit you?
For as long as I remember, at least in my adult life, I wake up and I'm not hungry in the morning. So I'm not even going to say I recommend for other people to do it. It's just me.
Yeah.
And whenever I've decided to follow the wisdom that we're told, you know, make sure your most important meal is your breakfast. Then I realized that, no, it makes me feel heavy for the rest of the day. I'm more hungry in the rest of the day. If I don't have anything in the morning, sometimes I won't really start to be hungry until maybe 2 in the afternoon. And that really keeps me sharp. I did all my exams during college fasting. I would fast the whole week of the exams. It just kept me so much sharper. So for me, I really equate feeling hungry. Like when I feel hungry, for me, it's not like it's pulling me to eat. It's almost like it's a good feeling of focus. So I don't have that pull to go eat. So I'm not saying I don't feel hungry, but I function better when I'm not, when my stomach is empty.
Well, the evidence showed you your function, right? I love that. And I'm pointing that out because a lot of people listening, you know, they're always looking for what to do, what you're doing, what I'm doing, what another expert is doing. But when I'm working with my clients one-on-one, it's really about trusting your own inner wisdom, what feels good for your constitution. And you obviously have the evidence that it made you feel a certain way. So thank you for pointing that out. All right, so we're going to dive in. You know, you and I have a shared passion for helping others. And I'm really moving away from this word longevity. You know, whoever coined health span, I think that's something that needs to go viral, because I think it's inevitable that we're going to live longer, but we have to live well longer. And touching base on a bit of your story, I would love to dive in, you know, your journey into herbalism, right? And how that led to the innovation that you had to create stem cell regen. How did the journey look for you to go from one extreme to the other?
I mean, it's kind of a convoluted story. Where it started with herbalism is really just, it was a passion. I was a real nerd as a kid, as a teenager. So I probably went, I don't know, 5 times in a club, you know, in my younger life, and then never in my later life. But so I was just always in books. So I, from my teens, I really started to just be interested in studying plants and doing formulations, you know, for anybody around me that needed some sort of help, some assistance from their health. So I never studied in that field academically, but I just studied all my life in plants. Then along the way, I was extremely shy as a kid. And one day I came across a book. The title was, in French, it was The Fantastic Faculties of the Brain. And in English, it's called Super Learning. Completely different title. I think the French title was more attractive. So I bought this book, and then I was probably 14, and I started to really dive into it. And it was all the techniques used by Russians and people of the Soviet bloc at the time to be really performant in athletic performances. Like these athletes at the Olympics, the Russians were so strong. It was all mental training. So that was described into this book, along with the work of Lozanov, Dr. Lozanov in Bulgaria, I believe, and he had developed ways of teaching people to learn really fast, like 3 years of school in 3 months for children, learning a language in a week, that kind of thing. And I became fascinated with all of that. So I developed all these techniques, not to apply with students, but with myself. I later wrote a book about this, and it's in probably 7 languages, but it's how to really learn fast. And I'm saying this because that really generated, like, a real desire to understand the brain.
Right.
So
we're
when
so
I, when
young.
the time came to go to college, the only place where I can do brain studies was at McGill University. It's the only place where there was a program limited to 6 students, which was neurophysiology. So I find my way to be able to get into that program. And as I'm doing all my studies, and we can dive into that a little bit later, but at some point I left to go into an ashram. But as I'm doing all of this, studying the brain, later on, after all these, my academic episode, if I could say, I started to work for a company that was selling a blue-green algae from Klamath Lake. You may have heard of blue-green algae from Klamath Lake. And one day I heard them give a presentation about their product, and I just thought, it was not a good presentation. I said, if you want, I can give you a much better presentation on your product. So using the techniques of accelerated learning or accelerated teaching to make people learn fast, and my background in herbalism and science, physiology. So I kind of explained to them what their product was doing for them. So the company liked it, and I was hired by the company. I started to study that blue-green algae, to do all the research on it. And as I'm doing the research, I discovered this plant is doing so many things in the body that we cannot explain. We cannot explain what's the mechanism of action. And one thing leading to another, we discovered that this plant actually acts as a stem cell mobilizer. It's triggering the release of stem cells from the bone marrow, something that had never been a thing before. This was in 2001. It was completely novel. So my life took a spin, and that's really, since that day, everything I've done is in the field of stem cell research. So convoluted, but that's how I got up to stem cell research.
No, what an incredible story. Did your parents guide you at all? That was like, it's such wisdom so early in your life.
No, I have great parents, but I must say, no, I've been pretty much of a loner all my life.
Fascinating. Yeah. Well, it paid off. I think that the entryway to stem cells, and maybe this is a good segue, you know, a lot of us in the West, when we think about stem cells, you know, there's a negative connotation to it, or from the media. I think it's really interesting. My introduction to stem cells is actually for my clients who are abroad. So they would get stem cell injections based on injuries that they'd have. But here it's not really talked about, or it wasn't really talked about. So for you, can we start with the basics then? Like, what are stem cells and what's their primary function?
So there's a lot of, it's complicated. There's a lot of misinformation that started to be political. And today it's more like pharmaceutical lobbying. I won't go into more depth, but there's the general information that is provided in the general mainstream media about stem cells is really not what stem cells are. Stem cells are, the best way to explain the stem cells to me is to talk about what is not a stem cell. All the cells in your body are somatic cells, cells of your skin, cells of your heart. Like, a cell of your heart will beat. That's all that it will do. It will never transform. It will never do anything else. It will never multiply. It will simply go to the end of its life and it will die. These are all the cells in your body. At the other end of that spectrum, you have stem cells. They are immortal, technically, in your bone marrow. They will multiply endlessly. And if the proper trigger is provided, they will be able to transform into virtually any kind of cell types in your body. Traditionally, they were only known to be able to become red blood cells, white blood cells, and platelets. So that's where the state of the science was in the early 2000s. And that's when I started to make these first observations in the scientific literature of stem cells documented to be able to become brain cell and heart cells and liver cells. And I thought, well, if they can become heart, brain, and liver, why not pancreas, lung, skin, and the rest? So let's assume that science will document that they can, and later on, and this was done, then that means they have to be the repair system of the body. So we published this article in the journal Medical Hypotheses, suggesting that stem cells are the repair system of the body. Now, fast forward to today, there is thousands of studies, like this is no longer in question. So that's what stem cells are. They are the repair system of the body. Just like we have an immune system, we have a repair system. And to me, from a scientific standpoint, I should say the philosophy of science, it's probably like the most intriguing thing, because everybody on this planet has experienced that the body repairs. Everybody has had a broken bone, a cut to the skin, a bruise, and whatever. Everybody has had something to their body, and everybody has witnessed that the body repairs. And yet, in medicine, let's say you have a surgery. The doctor will tell you, go rest in order to recover. Now, when you rest, what is the magic part of resting that makes you repair or recover? Mm-hmm. It's not the resting helps,
right.
But it's the repair system. It's your stem cells.
Your body's working.
Your stem cells are released. They go to the area that needs repair. They migrate in that area. They repair the tissue. So that's what stem cells are. Their role in the body is that they are the repair system of the body.
So ultimately, therefore, our bodies function. It's not just for repair, regeneration. It's the fundamental of how our body functions and how we live. And yet it's something that we don't talk about at all, right?
Inexistent. And I think one of the biggest obstacle to accept the whole concept is that the last time that systems have been documented as we know them today is about a century ago, early 1900s with the endocrine, immune, and nervous system. And not to think that a century later, we discover that, oops, there's another system in the body that we did not know. It's kind of hard to swallow. Mm-hmm. But if we really go through the whole physiology of how stem cells are working in the body, literally, it's just like the immune system. Mm-hmm. We have a repair system just like we have an immune system.
Yeah, you know, here I think another entry point to the topic of stem cells is often mothers when they're pregnant. You know, we're all told take our embryonic stem cells and save those for our kids in the future. And that's the scope that we know, right? And even now today, I'm questioning with all the toxins that they're finding in stem cells, if that's something that's even valid. But then I want to bring up, you know, as we age, when we think about stem cells or when we hear about stem cells in the news or the media, it's always for, you know, a shoulder repair or some very deep injury. But we don't think about the concept of using stem cells or stem cell activation on a day-to-day basis. Mm-hmm. So, you know, how would stem cells then help us in our day-to-day life and how we feel?
This is, to me, like the deepest part of what when oftentimes I say the discovery of stem cells is one of the greatest discoveries in medical history, probably the biggest discovery of our lifetime. But it's not the injection in a shoulder. It's not a treatment that we go in a clinic and we get a one-time treatment. The real meaning and the depth of stem cells is what they do every day. Because studies were done to study how they repair. So the typical study is you take a lot of these studies were done in mice. So you take a mouse, you irradiate the mouse, then you inject stem cells that are fluorescent. So that means any cell that is derived from that stem cells, whether they become liver cells, heart cells, they'll be fluorescent. So you shed a light on them and you can see. So that's a typical study that was done. So you do this to a mouse, then you trigger, let's say, a heart attack or a stroke or a broken bone. And then you see the tissue repair that is taking place, but it's green. So you can follow stem cells, because otherwise, the reason why we did not know this before, it's entirely invisible. The stem cells that get into the heart and become a heart cell, you can say that today it's a heart cell, but you cannot tell yesterday it was a stem cell. The phenomenon is invisible until you start to track it. But as they're doing that work, what they realize, the scientific community, is that stem cells go primarily where there is the injury, but they also go everywhere else in the body. Mm. And later on, through other protocol, it was confirmed in humans. You may have heard this phrase, you know, we have a new body every year, every 7 years. It was a good intuition with no data behind it. Now stem cell research brought the data. We have a new skin every month, a new liver every 2-3 years, half of a new heart every 25 years, new muscles every 9 years. Everything is constantly in a process of tissue turnover. We experience aging in our body like an old fence in your backyard. Every year, it's kind of a little bit more in decline.
Generates.
We feel we experience it like this, but it's not how it happens. What happens is that you lose cells every day, and your stem cells replace every day the cells that are being lost. When you're young, you have plenty of stem cells. You don't even experience the decline. There is no decline. Mm-hmm. There's a growth. But your red marrow that makes stem cells that you're born with converts into fatty marrow that does not make stem cells early in life. Mm-hmm. By age 30, we have lost 90% of our red marrow. So it's in our 30s that
90%?
90%
by the time we're 30.
Yeah. Wow. So you're left with 10% of what you're born with. By age 50, you're left with maybe 3-5% of what you're born with. And so there's a point in our 30s when we discover we don't heal like we used to. 30s, 40s, doesn't matter. It's different for everybody. The point is that there's a time in which there's not enough stem cells to offset cellular loss. And now cellular loss starts to gain ground. What is cellular loss in your pancreas? Hmm. It's diabetes. Mm-hmm. What is cellular loss in your brain cells making dopamine? It's Parkinson. Mm-hmm. Cellular loss in your heart? It's cardiomyopathy. every single age-related disease is the consequence, the end result of a slow process of losing cells that are not replaced. So I expressed that about 10 years ago as a hypothesis for understanding disease formation. It was in the Journal of Stem Cell Research and Therapy. And I was saying there's a way to test if that old view is true. Let's go and count the number of stem cells in people who have developed various kinds of age-related disease, and let's compare that with people, healthy people of the same age. Now, if you look at these studies were done, right? It's probably about 50 of them. Diabetes, atherosclerosis, high blood pressure, heart disease, erectile dysfunction, kidney failure, liver failure, emphysema, COPD, Parkinson, Alzheimer's, lupus, arthritis, and the list keeps growing. All these people have 50% or less than the number of stem cells that you find a healthy person of the same age. Point. So on the day-to-day, the point is that every day you lose cells, it's the role of your stem cells to replace the cells that are being lost. We have nothing. We have inherited today a modern body that has grown over thousands of years with a life expectancy of about 30 years of age, and that's what we're born with. Past 30 years of age, we did not need historically that power to repair. Now we do need it because we have gained 50 years of life.
Right.
So during that time, the whole concept here is we can boost that ability of the body to repair and maintain its own health by simply putting more stem cells in circulation. That's the day-to-day meaning of it.
You have so many incredible studies, and I think I was expecting to read one, two, or three, but you have study after study after study that just shows the science and the data of how the body can heal itself. And I think that a lot of people, our concept of understanding is that they were so specific, like specifically for shoulders, specifically for knees, specifically for liver or heart. So if somebody then goes on this journey of increasing stem cells within their body, this has to mean that there's a brighter future for how we think about aging. And why isn't this mainstream? Like, why isn't this front page news in a society that's so consumed with aging, aging well, getting rid of disease?
I have the same question. You know, sometimes it makes me think of, you probably have heard the story of this obstetrician, Hungarian obstetrician with hand washing. So on for your listeners who may not know the story, he discovered that on days that he was washing his hands, he had much less death and complication in surgery. So he decided to scrub his hands and he no longer had problems. So he tried to have his colleagues wash their hands.
And people died.
25 years to have his colleagues simply wash their hands, and a century before, in the early 1980s, this became a mandatory practice in hospitals.
Something
washing
so
your
simple,
hands.
Right?
So I'm looking at this and I'm just thinking, anytime something completely new shows up, it takes time for minds to wrap themselves around it. And here we have all these layers of obstacles, like what I talked about before. It's not easy to accept that, you know, we have a new system in the body that has always been there. It's as relevant, as important as the immune system, but it's not taught yet in med school. Your doctor does not even know really about it. So it's hard to swallow, but in reality, that's what it is. So I've been doing this now for 20 some years, and it's the grind of it, making people discover that their body indeed has a repair system. And as you said, it's not one or two studies. It's hundreds of studies. I mean, there's so many studies showing how your stem cells participate to tissue repair. And not only this, but there's a direct link between how many stem cells you have in your bloodstream and your body's ability to repair and to stay healthy as you age.
And how can someone measure their stem cells? How can we check for this?
I'm working on developing a method right now that will make this easier, because right now the gold standard method to quantify stem cells is flow cytometry. So it's a machine that you take a blood sample. When you inject that sample in the flow cytometer, all the cells will align themselves into a very fine tube. And at some point they pass in front of a laser behind which there's a photosensitive plate. And then it will record the luminescence of the cell, the size of the cell. You can tag that cells with antibodies for specific cellular markers that have different dyes, like a red one, a blue one, a green one, and one dyes or marks for stem cells, the other one marked for non-stem cells. So the flow cytometer will count that was a stem cell, that was not. And in that way, you can count how many stem cells were in the sample. But traditionally, a flow cytometer is used mostly in oncology.
Right.
So now it's spreading. There are more and more. When we started our study in 2001 in Oregon, there were three flow cytometers in the state of Oregon, and we had two of them. Gives you an idea of how rare of a machine that was. Yeah. So it's more common today, but it's still, you cannot go and ask your doctor, give me a prescription to get like a cell count of my stem cells. That is not available today. The machine is available. The technology is available. The methodology has been developed. It's just that it's not part of what is the normal practice of medicine. But I'm working on a method that will allow people to really be able to quantify your stem cells. Because to me, this is where it's going. My next book that I'm working on is, can we quantify, or not quantify, but derive through a meta-analysis of the scientific literature, what is the stem cell number under which I'm now at risk? I know that in 5-10 years, I'll develop a health problem. And if I ask anybody, what is the health problem that you think you will develop later? Most people have a good idea of what it is.
Absolutely.
Out of their family history, their genetics, past their lifestyle, past injuries. Everybody knows what's the weak part of their physiology. Well, you need to know now, and you need to start to take care of that and start to bump the number of stem cells in circulation. So stem cells now will become then a risk factor in terms of the number that you have in your blood. Mm-hmm. So it's important then to quantify. So that's the idea now of developing a machine to be able to do this. But today, unfortunately, it's not an easy task.
Yeah, not yet.
Christian. Not yet. That's what we do in our studies. So we do it, but it's not easily available.
This is incredible. Like, this is big work. When I think about the wellness industry today, I think we're still so symptom focused or, still giving a label of something like an illness. It's like we're getting to the root cause of why you're suffering. Oh, you've got IBS. Oh, you got Crohn's. Oh, you've got this. And then it's like, you know, we're still focused on treating the one symptom instead of going deeper within the body and figuring out the source of the inflammation.
I think you're putting the finger now on another of the obstacles for all this information to sink in into like mainstream medicine, is that mainstream medicine is all about symptoms.
Yeah.
Until you've developed the symptoms that gives you a diagnostic, you're healthy. Mm-hmm. That in medicine, you're healthy until you're not healthy. And yet, until you have the diagnosis. And we all know that everything develops over 5, 10, 15 years.
Yeah.
During that time, that's when the cellular loss is accumulating. So what we're saying is that during that time, give back to your body its ability to repair. So, and I don't want to say it prevents the disease.
Right.
What I'm saying is that it just maintains the health that you have today. But that concept, as easy to understand as it is when we talk about it, in the emotional part of the body, people mostly don't really take action until something has really showed up in their life. That's where the whole field of health span, biohacking, all this world is changing that old conception, this mentality that people do something for their health, period, optimal health.
Well, you gave a pretty good picture. You know, when we're young, when we're kids and our adolescents, we don't think about the pains or the aches or anything, right? So to paint a picture of health where you can go back to even an essence of that, I think is incredible. Mm-hmm. And don't get me wrong, there is a time and a place. I do a lot of biomarker testing with a lot of my clients, and they're fantastic for helping us understand the causes for their suffering, right? Mm-hmm. But what if we go deeper than that and say, okay, well, here's what's out of balance. Here's the symptoms that you're suffering from. Here's the systemic inflammation that's happening. What if we just do something in the back end for your cells to come alive?
Mm-hmm. Correct.
To dissipate that, right?
Correct. Because everything that you're talking about, like the markers, and it's not a criticism at all. It's sort of, to me, I see it as a compliment. Everything today that is talked about in the whole world of both medicine, alternative medicine, supplements, biohacking, all of that, you take a cell, an existing cell, and you give it more longevity. Mm-hmm. You increase its mitochondrial function. You clean it with autophagy. You lengthen its telomere. You're like, we do a lot of things to a living cell. Mm-hmm. That cell will die nevertheless, regardless what you're doing with it. And that cell dying and aging is not wrong.
Right.
It's its normal life cycle.
Right. It's meant
to
happen.
So you actually want to probably accelerate that cell kicking the bucket and bring in new cell. Oftentimes I make this, it's a silly analogy, but it gives the picture. You've got a soccer team and you have your 65-year-old player. Do you want to find a way to make it play another 5 years, or do you want to bring a 15-year-old? So in the body, it's a little bit like this. The focus is all on nourishing the existing cells. We have to do it. Nourishing the existing cells, boosting the existing cells. And here what we're saying is that do this because it's valuable, but bring new cells that will replace mm-hmm. the old one. So that's why there's a real complement with what I'm doing right now, and we're working on these products, but let's say senolytics. Okay. So that you make the cell, kick the bucket, and then you replace them with new cells. And in that way, you do real rejuvenation of the body.
Oh my gosh, incredible. And is there a way, and from your studies, can you correlate the increase in production or release of stem cells with telomeres?
It's a good question because the research was not done. Mm. Okay, but just like pure basic science.
Yeah.
We today quantify telomeres, and I don't want to criticize the process, but there's a reality to it. We quantify telomere in a population of cells, lymphocytes, that have a lifetime of about 3 months. Mm. And from this, we make this huge extrapolation on the individuals without ever having the chance to look at telomeres in the heart, in the liver, like in the tissues. This is a huge extrapolation of meaning of that data. And it's interesting to see that when we use products that are good to lengthen telomeres, they don't really have a huge impact on your life. Like a year later, you can see small changes. So to me, the strongest strategy to lengthen telomeres in a tissue, what are the cells that have the longest telomere in your body? This is your stem cells, because they have telomeres in the bone marrow. When they're released from the bone marrow and they go into a tissue, in that tissue, that new cell of that tissue is now the cell of that tissue with the longest telomere. So you want to increase the average length of telomeres in a tissue, just proves the release of stem cells, flood these stem cells to tissues, and you're increasing the telomere, the average telomere length of cells everywhere in your body. Hmm. I mean, it's so simple.
It is. It sounds so simple.
It is.
It sounds so simple. I'm excited for it to grow. And it sounds like the science is really emerging quite quickly. And I feel like telomeres, they kind of had their spotlight for a little bit. And when we're measuring telomeres in relation to how somebody was improving their health, for example, we would take kind of a multifactorial approach with, you know, the basics, better sleep, better nutrition, better diet, lower exposure to toxins and to stress. So with that said, are those commonalities, that foundation, something that's beneficial for stem cells also?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And then that's one part. You know, again, we didn't talk about it per se, but it's like obvious in the way we're talking about it. This is all new science.
Yeah.
It's 20 years old. Yeah. And of that 20 years, this is like the whole lifespan of that research. It's extremely young. And a lot of the research, the bulk of it, went into the application of that for the treatment of various like advanced diseases, heart disease, Parkinson, those kinds of things. For everything else in between, what we talked about, health span, there's barely anything that has been done. So if we look at what has been done, I find it fascinating to see that everything that we know to be not good for, not everything, of what has been studied, what we know to not be good for health, ends up having, coincidentally, a negative effect on stem cells. What we know to be good for health ends up having, coincidentally, a good effect on stem cells. So it really hammers on the fact that stem cells really seem to be the absolute cornerstone of the body's ability to repair and stay healthy. A lot of things that we do in our lives end up leveraging that part of our system, which is stem cells. So sleep supports stem cell proliferation in the brain and differentiation in the brain. Smoking cigarette suppresses stem cells' ability to migrate in a tissue and proliferate. Super simple. You smoke a cigarette through a filter paper. Right. You take that filter paper, you put it into a liquid where stem cells are proliferating. And if you take that stem cells before and after, you've shut down their ability to migrate and proliferate.
Right.
Stress will do the same thing. They did this in mice. You take in rats, I think. Whatever, in an animal. You take the animal. You take a stem cell sample from these animals. You quantify their ability to migrate and proliferate. You take the animal. You put it in a pool in water. The animal doesn't like to be in water. It gets extremely stressed. You take the animal out. You take another blood sample, and now the stem cells have shut down their ability to proliferate and migrate in tissues. So look, and it's linked to cortisol. If you remove the adrenal gland, you don't see this effect. So it's all cortisol, stress hormones. So look at our modern life.
Exactly.
Show me one person that is not exposed to stress in today's world since a very young age. So we live for decades with a repair system until we learn a way to manage stress, you know, not sweating the small things. Then we live in a world where our repair system is suppressed constantly. And I remember in this old quest or interest in herbalism in my early age. I remember I was probably like, 15, 16 years old. And I was reading this book. It was the first book of its kind at the time on neuropsychoimmunology, basically documenting the link between stress and a whole slew of age-related or degenerative diseases. And it's basically all diseases have a stress component associated with them. And now we discover that that stress component actually affects stem cells, so it reduces your ability to repair. Of course, it's going to be linked to almost anything else in the body.
Yeah. Wow.
So stress, smoking cigarette, alcohol, all of these have a negative effect on stem cells. Positive fasting, antioxidant nutrition, anti-inflammatory nutrition, good sleep, exercise, all of these things have positive effect. Meditation within an hour or two of after a good meditation, we can see the increase in the number of stem cells in circulation.
All the foundations that we know to be true, but we don't have the connection of seeing what's happening within our bodies. So it's like this evidence is really going to be supportive for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And what about living today's modern world? You know, we talk about a lot the toxicity that is around us, the pollution that we are exposed to, EMF radiation and stuff like that. That must be a contributing factor.
EMF has been shown to affect cellular stem cells proliferation, but it's not clear because EMF is a broad field. The frequencies, the intensities, it's a broad field. Yeah. It's not clear right now what it is that it does. And unfortunately, on the rest, I would have to just assume the general stem cells are so sensitive in their process of proliferation that anything that normally would be a toxin for any cell is probably having a bigger impact even on stem cells. But I'm not aware of any studies that have been done in that area at this point.
I have this dream of being able to take, you know, two people who are on the same protocol, doing the same things for their health. One of them is in a city with constant stress and noise and helicopters and drive to do more and media and news. And the other person who, as we talked about before the show, same exact situation, but now at an ashram. Uh-huh. Foods are the same. Right? Same amount of sleep hours, meditating every single day. Mm. It just makes sense to me that the person who's taken or extracted from the stressful situation is going to heal and live longer. So a lot of what I think you and I are talking about is like the impact or the assault that's happening in living in today's modern world. Mm-hmm. And maybe the timing of stem cells right now is because we need it most. Mm-hmm. We're so far away from how, you know, the homeostasis of our body was intended to be. We're living longer. We're living in worlds that have, you know, so many more chemicals and stress and additives that we just don't need anymore, that stem cells are needed more than ever.
Yeah. To me, in everything that you just mentioned there, quieting the mind, like the influence of the mind on health, I would put that like at the top of the list. Because you could have a person living in L.A., and have really sort of is really controlling their mind. They're not taken by this crazy flow of life.
And you
could have somebody in an ashram completely stuck in his own or her own like story and hurts from the past and not getting over these, and could have actually lived more inner stress than the person who is more free. So for me, it's like the work on the mind of really, and the way that I have to summarize it, I'm fascinated by all the work on near-death experience, not for near-death experience itself, but because of what it implies. So the body is dead. So it's flat. The brain is flatline. The body has no vital sign. And people come back with an experience of their identity as even stronger than the identity that they have as a person. That identity is completely calm, completely serene, has a much greater understanding of why things have happened certain ways in their life. And they come back with that memory. That presence is not born at the time of death. It's in us.
Absolutely.
We cover it with all this identification to body, to personality, to history, to opinions, to ideas. And this rabbit wheel never stops in the brain. Mm-hmm. So, and then it's masked. That presence is masked. So to me, to get closer and closer to that presence within is going to be the number one to help everything work better in the body, including stem cells. Because that's one thing that fascinates me with my work, because my training is brain research. And so clearly demonstrated, documented in the anatomy of the body, the brain has connection to the bone marrow. If you block noradrenaline, stem cells won't be released from the bone marrow. There's a brain component to the release of stem cells. All the capillaries where stem cells need to migrate have nerve terminals. Mm. Stem cells have receptors to all the main neurotransmitters. Mm. So when we say that we can heal ourselves, I remember in Montreal when I was a teen, I read the story of this guy who had a spinal cord injury diving in a pool, and he broke his neck. He was completely paralyzed. And he spent 3 years, in his word, he says, every day I would visualize that light repairing his spinal cord. And he completely recovered, a condition that medicine cannot do anything with. And now I'm starting to realize you can, with your mind, drive that whole repair process by simply having an effect on stem cells. So all of this to say, the mindset, how we live with our mind, to me, is probably the greatest impact on our ability to repair and therefore be healthy.
I'm so happy you brought this up. If I have a dream of one day, if somebody goes into a doctor's office, they'll start in a meditation room. Mm-hmm. They'll start with a guided breathwork practice to really help them come into their bodies to feel, even for a moment, what it's like to shift out of stress, anxiety, worry, and tension, and then come into a state of peace. Mm-hmm. Or leave the doctor's office that way instead of feeling scared or frightful, right?
They may no longer need the doctor when they do this because they'll know what the problem is.
Yeah, and to your point, you know, there is a time and a place. Obviously, this is Western medicine. This is such a gift for the future of healthcare. But at the same time, we're overlooking the foundational truth of what it means to be healthy. Mm-hmm. We were talking about Eastern medicine. You know, my mom, I've only known her to suffer from rheumatoid arthritis. And she ate the right foods. She did the diet, the sleep, the herbs, all the different types of Eastern doctors and everything, but the disease progressed. But when we talk more about her history, there was a lot of trauma and pain and sadness and this, like, you know, inner accumulation of nervous system wear and tear that mm-hmm. caused her to just, it was her blueprint. It's all she knew. Mm-hmm. Right? And I'm just thinking, for a lot of people listening, I mean, we all have our traumas and things that have happened to us. But if that's our blueprint, and if stem cells are connected to that wiring, then there's always going to be an essence of not being completely safe, right? Not mm-hmm. being able to fully regenerate. Or, you know, the studies around heart coherence, right? What mm-hmm. happens to the body when the heart mm-hmm. comes into coherence? Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, you shift your physiology completely, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, going back to the biology of belief with Bruce Lipton,
yes,
which is really just an echo of, like, ancient Indian teaching. Your mind controls everything, and your belief controls everything. Mm-hmm. So if you believe that you cannot repair or cannot heal, you probably won't. If you believe that you have a problem and it's part of you, then you will have that problem. But if you believe that you have the ability to get out of it, you probably will.
So can we call that the step one then for stem cell regeneration?
There you go. Believe that you know, you have a broken bone. You go to the doctor puts you in a cast and tells you come back in 6 weeks. There is no language in medicine about that repair process. It's a black hole. We discover now that it's your stem cells. You get a cold, the doctor will tell you, you don't have to be told by your doctor. You know that you just need to boost your immune system. All I'm saying here is that now we discover that the body has equally a repair system. And when something is not functioning properly or is broken, then the first step is boost your repair capability. And then there's a lot of things that we can do. And that starts with, there are herbs you can do, there are things you can do to put more stem cells in circulation, but it can start also with the mind. Just create the inner space for that repair system to really kick in, and it helps.
So be careful what you believe. Mm-hmm. And I would say aging even falls into this category because we're bombarded, you know, after 40, you know, it's all going downhill. If we believe that we're going to age faster or get sick, then I believe that also becomes part of us.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
But I think what you're saying to me goes so deep because there's now a quest, you know, for people to go to, let's say, 150, 180. Great. Let's pursue it. I think that the capability, the true capability of the nervous system and the brain to truly believe that in a world where nobody in our history has gone there is a very hard belief to achieve suddenly. Mm-hmm. So I think it's going to be really a progression where we'll slowly understand that it can extend. Mm-hmm. But let's go for it. It won't move forward if you don't go for it.
I'm with you. I'll go for it. So let's move into some of those natural remedies then. Mm-hmm. So we talked about diet and exercise and sleep. Let's talk about, you know, one of your fortes, the herbal remedies that you found. And even some of the stories, I would love for you to shed light. Mm-hmm. There's so many stories in this book. The miracles, I'll call them miracles, that you've seen with people and how their health has changed.
So one of the main plants, it's the one with which I have done the most research. It's not the strongest one. We've discovered stronger ones after, but it's this blue-green algae from Klamath Lake. Mm-hmm. So I was hired in 1995 by this company to document the active compounds and mechanisms of action for these, for the benefits from this plant. But as I'm doing this work, I come across people who reported reversal of multiple sclerosis, severe emphysema, heart disease, diabetes, Parkinson's, stroke, kidney failure, liver failure. Mm-hmm. And at first, they're just stories. But when 10 becomes 50, becomes 100, then it starts to be like compelling. And for me, I've always been sort of a purist as a scientist. Like if I observe something that doesn't fit my theory, I don't deny the observation. I just mm-hmm. throw away the theory. Right. I prefer to say, I don't get it. I don't understand it. But let's keep digging. So there's a point where those stories became compelling, like they were real. So how could we explain those kinds of benefits? But to me, the biggest one was, how can one plant have an effect on one's pancreas, someone else's heart, someone else's brain, someone else's liver? It was touching so many different aspects of human health. After 4 or 5 years of research, we still did not have an understanding until one day I came across an article documenting in 2001 stem cells going from the bone marrow to the brain and becoming a brain cell. So in a world where we know the brain does not regenerate and yeah. we know stem cells only do blood cells, I thought it was fascinating.
Yeah.
So it's before the time when literature is on the web, scientific literature. So I went to the local medical library, started to dive for, I don't know, a week or so in the library. And I found two more articles, one documenting stem cells going to the heart and becoming heart cells and one to the liver. Mm-hmm. So I thought, if stem cells can become heart, liver, and brain, why not the rest? So they have to become the rest. Otherwise, right. what would be the mechanism of action? So let's assume that they can become the rest, and it's just a matter of time. Science will document this. Yeah. If they do, that means they are the repair system of the body. So we published this hypothesis in 2001. So the idea was, what if that plant triggers the release of stem cells from the bone marrow? So that's when we bought the flow cytometer, tested it, and we saw that mm-hmm. it was triggering the release of stem cells from the bone marrow. So I have a great idea. More stem cells in your blood should be great. And I have a product that was putting more stem cells in circulation, but these are just like good ideas. Doesn't mean that there's anything to it. So I shipped about 200 bottles of this extract to a friend of mine in France. Mm-hmm. He was a naturopathic doctor, and he was seeing all the cases that doctors told them, there's nothing else I can do for you. Like end cases of heart disease, severe emphysema, those kind of things. And I shipped him bottles, says, give that to your patient and just tell me what you see. And the results from that first round of experiments, if you want, was just mind-blowing. Like this woman has been for a number of years 18 hours a day on an oxygen tank because her emphysema was so severe. 3 months later, her daughter said she went for the first time to the cathedral. She had not been there in years. And then she climbed all the stairs and she was fine. Wow. We had this four-year-old child with spinal myopathy, genetic disease. She had two aunts completely paralyzed, and she had never stood up and never walked. She was crawling on the floor. That's it. The doctor said it will only get worse. So the mother asked me, can I give the product to my daughter? I said, I mean, it's a free country. Do what you want, but it's not going to work because you're releasing stem cells that have the same genetic defect. So she gave the product to her daughter. And then about 3 weeks later, I get an email. For the first time, her daughter stood up. Weeks later, for the first time, she started to walk. And it's that case that brought the whole concept that I published much later to say health is a balance between cellular loss and cellular renewal. So in that child, the only explanation that I could have is that we change nothing to the disease process. But if we help to bring nerve cells faster than they genetically degenerate, mm-hmm. then we bring functionality. So a lot of these cases came in, and so I thought, that's it, we're putting an end to disease. It was a naive thought in 2001, but I still believe that that's what we can achieve. We can change the level of health and wellness. So that's the first plan that we worked with. These are the stories that you see in your book, in the book, and I can share a few of them. For example, the I have many of those. I published in that book, in the same time in the scientific literature, the conditions for which normally medicine has no solution. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, if I use this product for something for which medicine, like multiple sclerosis, where you can have spontaneous remission sometimes.
Yeah.
So you get remission and people will say, well, it could be a spontaneous remission. It doesn't prove anything on your product. So we need to go to cases where there's a clear black and white differences. So we have a case of somebody on a heart transplant list with, I think it was like 13% ejection fraction, which is like barely alive. And he was basically sent home to die. Yeah. And then he got a hold of the product and he started to feel better. And 3 months later, he get a call for a heart and he drives himself, climbs the stairs. He shows up, they see him, they cancel the surgery. They do a bunch of tests. And at the end of all the tests, the conclusion was, you're not 100% perfect, but you're just like any 65-year-old that will pull from the street. And I saw this man again 10 years later and he's still totally fine. We have it described in the book like this, severe cases of Parkinson, of diabetes, of arthritis, of kidney failure, stroke, recovery from stroke. So these are what you have in the book.
I just want to hover on something that you said specifically with the boy. So despite his genetic code, him increasing or activating his stem cells had nothing to do with his genetic code at all.
That was the observation.
It's what you expected.
I'm sure it will degenerate. Not only I'm sure, I know that this little girl will degenerate still, because here's a slice of human life which fascinates me. Mm-hmm. This is what happened to a young girl. Somebody told that person, you can have the same product much cheaper, but it was not the extract. So it was not having the same effect, but you can have it much cheaper. Mm-hmm. So she called us and she said, well, your product was too expensive. So she took the other product. And her daughter reversed, and she says, the product stopped working. So she never did it again.
Oh, my goodness.
Isn't that something? And it's not the first case. We have had many cases like this over the years. It goes against the belief. That's a condition that medicine say cannot improve.
Right.
So you see an improvement, and even yourself, you doubt it, and you say, maybe it was not it, because right now it's not working with this other product. And we've seen that in a number of cases. So in any case, after documenting that plant, mm-hmm. The first step for me was, we evolved in symbiosis with the environment. It cannot be that there's just one plant having an effect on stem cells. So how do we find the others? So I started to look at the first one that will come to mind as plants historically associated to have a broad variety of benefits. So you think goji berry, medicinal mushroom, adaptogens, colostrum, those kinds of things. We tested them. They all have an effect on stem cells.
Wow.
But the real star ingredients is when I had a chance through connections that I made with a pharmacist that was traveling. She was researching plants for neurodegenerative disease, Parkinson, Alzheimer's, in Papua New Guinea, in the Congos, in South America. She would go weeks at a time, trek in the jungle with the healers to look for these plants. What she did was fascinating. So I asked her, any plant that the healers told you, oh, this is good for everything? So the first answer was, nothing is good for everything. So I sent her a copy of my book, and I said, I'm looking for something that is good for one thing, triggering the release of stem cells, but it will be experienced as many benefits. So she said, yeah, there is one plant in one of her trip to Madagascar. So the guide and translator on the way back to the airport stopped in a small market and scooped a bag of these black beads and said, study that. What do you do as a scientist if I say study that?
Yeah.
What do? You test it for what? So it was in her freezer for 5 years. So she sent me some of these beads. And of course, we are the guinea pigs in the lab. So we take a blood sample. We take those black beads and we take another blood sample an hour or two later. And we saw the strongest release that we have seen so far.
Wow.
So it is. So we ask, what is it? So it's of 65 species of aloe in Madagascar, one of them, Aloe macrochlada, has been used for centuries to make a product called vahona, which is those black beads, for all kinds of health issues and to help grandpa still work in the field, at the farm. So for longevity and a health span. And so knowing how they were preparing these black beads, so we prepared our own extract of this aloe macrochlada, and then we got the strongest response that we have so far. So that product alone almost doubled the number of stem cells in circulation. So it was in existence as a system of harvesting, like it was for local markets. So we had to work with the University of Antananarivo to survey the population of aloe macrochlada in the wild, then develop a program of propagation. So about 100,000 plants have been replanted. We have a network of harvesters to collect this aloe, bring it out from the mountains. They walk on like for hours on these
Oh
little
my
paths
gosh.
and flip-flops, and they bring like 60 pounds of aloe on their heads. So they bring like this maybe 5 to 10 tons per month. So we have a system now of production to produce that ingredient. All of this is done by a good friend of mine, John, who basically was working with that pharmacist and relocated Madagascar. Now he's doing that in Madagascar. So every single ingredient in our formula was developed through that kind of observation, that kind of quest and research. So every ingredient is researched like this one by one, and that's what we have today.
And this is what led to StemRegen.
Correct. StemRegen, now called StemRegen Release, is the combination of the top products that we have documented over the years. And the sort of the impetus behind StemRegen is that in the previous product, which was just a blue-green algae extract, when I saw what this could do, I knew that this could be a stem cell modality on par with other types of stem cell modality. But as long as it is a blue-green algae extract, nobody will, ex it's never going to be seen as a stem cell modality, as something that can be retapped in stem cells. It had to penetrate the medical community. So the product had to be stronger to penetrate the medical community because we had star cases with the blue-green algae, but overall, maybe it was like 30-40% of the people taking it. We need to have a much
Higher
higher
rate,
rate of success. So that's why I developed StemRegen Release. So now we're able to really work with doctors. We're starting to accumulate more and more cases. We now involve into a number of clinical trials. We have one clinical trials on congestive heart failure, one on diabetes and on Parkinson. We are developing another one on COPD, liver failure, and so on. So we're developing now, we're growing the clinical research on the product. Really, not to document or claim that it can do anything on disease. I don't care about that part. But if I am to say putting more stem cells in circulation will mean something for your health, I cannot prove this in a healthy person. I cannot say take the product for a year and you're as healthy as you were a year ago, so it works. It doesn't work. So I need to show the effect on an actual disease process. Once that is shown, really the conclusion of all of this is just to say releasing stem cells from your bone marrow really gives back to your body its innate ability to repair, and it will allow you to keep the health that you have today. That's really what we're after through all these studies, but it's all ongoing.
This is all fascinating. And I can imagine, is part of your work today still researching or partnering with researchers around the world? Like, if I had a dream, if I could be doing anything right now, I would be traveling to all of the remote places in the world and finding the sage, wise healers or herbalists living there to figure out, like, what are these ingredients? What are these recipes and herbs and teas that we need to keep alive for the future? And it sounds like you're doing that.
Yes, and at this point today, like it's unfortunately not now we have funding. So now we can go and probably go deeper into all of this. But for the past 20 years, it was, I mean, I know some of these plants. We have one from Papua New Guinea that is just unbelievable what the healers are saying about this plant. We have one from West Africa or the Congos. We have a few that will come from South America. There are plants here that we could document having an effect on stem cells and keep working. It's just that one little observation that gives us the hunch that there's probably something behind that plant, and it's 3 years of research to now bring that plant. And once you've documented it, now it's the system of harvest and collecting it large scale. A lot of these plants cannot really have, it will damage the environment or the culture if we go large scale. Yeah. There's like a lot of implication Absolutely. In developing some of these ingredients. But we're into that phase right now. So we have other plants that at some point in time will develop. And another line of research for me that is absolutely fascinating. Nothing has been done on the bone marrow. We know that the bone marrow shrinks mm-hmm. and converts as we age.
Yeah.
Other than that, there's very little that we know from the bone marrow. The bone marrow, for as far as we know in medicine, is what you boil, you know, into your bone marrow soup, you know, and that's it.
Yeah.
So there's nothing said about it, except if you have leukemia. Now we look at it. So in the scientific literature, there's very little about the bone marrow. What makes it converts to yellow, to fatty marrow? How can we slow down this process? If we could slow down the process of that conversion, it would probably be the absolute most fundamental thing that we can do for health span and longevity. Mm-hmm. So that's a field of research, but we're talking, we'll be in this for 10 years because it's fundamental research. It won't bring any benefit financially for the next decade. So it needs a lot of financial support to be able to do that work. But right now, that's kind of where my eyes are going, to do that kind of work.
Well, we need this to go mainstream. We need to completely just like, I feel like mitochondria is having a moment in the spotlight, but there's a way of going deeper within the body. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the concept that I love, which has been foundational to all of your work, is just like the trust that we can have in nature mm-hmm. to give us what we need to heal. And I know that you've put a lot of thought into creating these products. Is there synergy specifically within the ingredients that you chose?
Yes, the synergy. There are three main, I won't go into the depth of it because it gets complicated and boring, but there are three main ways, mechanisms of action to trigger the release of stem cells from the bone marrow. So the plants all target like one or the other or a few of those, so that the idea was to have a whole spread where we trigger that release synergistically by affecting more than one mechanisms of action. So these plants are working together. And so there are five plants that release. But if I go back to a little bit of what we were talking earlier, as I'm looking to medicinal mushroom, mm-hmm. goji berry, some polysaccharides, what we discovered to our surprise is that they trigger the migration of stem cells out of the blood into tissues. Mm-hmm. So the first time we observed this, we thought, like probably any lab tech or scientist would say, you get the complete opposite of what you're expecting. So that means the machine is broken or is dirty. So you clean the machine. Now we get the same data. It must be the antibodies. So we threw all of our antibodies. We changed the antibodies. We got the same data. We thought the reagents then are wrong. So we changed everything in the lab. We consistently got the same response to the point where we need to say, okay, this is a real response. Let's really dig into it. And we discovered that a lot of these adaptogen type compounds or plants work by increasing the density of the receptor at the surface of stem cells that respond from the SOS coming from an injured tissue. So stem cells now can react faster to leave the blood, migrate, and go into that tissue. So the moment we started to identify some of these products, then the idea was to combine them. Mm-hmm. Let's release stem cells and at the same time drive them into tissues, because that's where they mean something. It's when they can go and repair. And the moment I was able to start to combine these together, then doctors that I was working with immediately told me, oh, this formula works much better.
Wow.
So right now there's these two big synergies in stem regen release. Release and migration.
I really wanted to bring that up because a lot of these ingredients that you're talking about, medicinal mushrooms or goji berry or adaptogens, people will own in on just one. And I feel like practitioners, you know, back in the day, it would have never have just uh-huh. been one. It would have been based on need and function and maybe using it in synergy with others. Mm-hmm. So I'm happy you brought that up. So for people who are listening, they're obviously very curious. They're very interested in how they can release their own stem cells for their optimal health mm-hmm. and for feeling better in the future. When do you start? You know, if people, okay, I'm ready to start. You know, is there an age that you recommend? Is it a symptom that you have?
I mean, of course, if you have a symptoms, that means something is broken, so you can boost your repair system. By all means, it's a good thing to do. If you have not developed the problem, the point here is not to be negative, but you have to just understand you have started to develop the problem.
Prevention.
You're past your 40s, you have started to develop it.
Yeah.
Diabetes is losing 60% of your cells making insulin. If you've lost 30 to 40%, You don't have diabetes. You're not handling sugar like you used to, but you're fine. But it's in the process. So repairing and reversing all of this before the problem actually shows up, you may not feel that it's happening, but your stem cells do the work. Every day of your life, your stem cells do the work. Think of Hiroshima. Mm-hmm. If you have radiation and you kill all your stem cells, you don't live more than 3 months.
Yeah, you're done.
Stem cells are essential to our survival. The proof that your stem cells are working is that you're alive today. So leverage them for repair. So that's where I would start. And it can be any age. What I mean is that when I started this in the early 2000s, I thought below, let's say 20, 25 years of age, you have plenty of stem cells. It doesn't really matter. Mm-hmm. Above 80 years old, you don't have many stem cells left. So, you know, right. If I give you a penny and I double it, you still have only 2 pennies. Right. Right. So it's not going to make a difference. And I can tell you, 20 years of doing this, the data is not showing this. The data is clearly showing at any point in life, if you can put more stem cells in circulation, your body will utilize them to do something better. And if you're older, the second penny is actually worth a lot. Your body will take everything out of it. So we see a lot of good results in older people. This idea that past 40 years old, your stem cells are worthless. All the studies that we're doing right now with remarkable result on heart function, on Parkinson, these are all people that are like 65 to 70, 76 years old in the study right now. So at all ages, your stem cells can work.
I've yet to give a conference where if I'm asking if anyone suffers from a symptom, there's still... Every hand is up in the air. So
past 40, you have to.
Fascinating. Okay, so I just want to point out, you know, somebody listening, they're going to look up stem regen. They're going to drive by the grocery store, let's say. What are some basic things that you keep in your pantry for healing every day?
For healing every day?
Yeah. Some food ingredients. Goji berries, is that part of your diet consistently?
Not part of my diet consistently. I mean, I have access to stem regen really. I would say
put your mind in
berries,
somebody.
Polyphenols. Put polyphenols in your diet. Mm-hmm. So berries, like dark berries. Every berry that is dark, go for it. Acai berry, blackberry, those berries. There's more and more data showing that polyphenols have an effect on stem cells. It is the active ingredient in sea buckthorn berry that we have documented the benefits. So take polyphenols, medicinal mushroom. Consume medicinal mushroom. They will have an effect on stem cells. If you have access to seaweed, fucus.
I think seaweed's going to have a highlight.
Yeah, Undaria, you will need to eat a lot, but they will have an effect on stem cells as well. So add seaweeds to your diet. What else?
Herbal teas?
Sorry?
Green tea, herbal tea
will help. Once stem cells have been released, this is one thing. Now they need to be able to reach the places where they need to repair. So that means help suppress systemic inflammation. This is why we've developed these other two products. But suppress systemic inflammation, curcumin, Google. There are a lot of things, black pepper. A lot of things that we can do to suppress systemic inflammation. And also open the vasculature, natokinase, help blood flow, you know, circulation. Stem cells may be like 20 microns. They need to go into a capillary that has maybe 12 microns. So the stem cells will have to squeeze themselves. So good lipid membranes. So a lot of omega-3s to really support flexibility of membranes. All these things that we all know are good for health, well, they happen to all have an effect on the ability of stem cells to do their job in the body.
So now you have a different why for consuming them because you know that you're going to be targeting your stem cells, which is amazing. Before we wrap up with some rapid fire questions, walk me through a protocol. So I've only been taking Stem Regen for about a week. Mm-hmm. Talk to me about the process. Once a day, twice a day, is there one product that you would prioritize? Does it work as a system that you would recommend?
Yes, they work as a system. If you can only take one, I would say Stem Regen Release, the one that we've mostly been talking about today. Yeah. And the protocol, in our studies, we do 2 capsules 3 times a day. Mm-hmm. But we do that in our studies because we want to maximize the outcome. Some people have great results with just 2 capsules a day. So the general concept here is that more is better, but some people do very well with just 2 capsules. Okay. So we have the standard protocol, 2 capsules, and what we call the advanced protocols, 2 capsules 3 times a day. What I have seen over the years, we won't have the time to go through all the details, but there are reasons why stem cells cannot work sometimes in the body optimally. Mm-hmm. I just mentioned it. Systemic inflammation and poor microcirculation. Mm-hmm. Signal was developed to increase the signal-to-noise ratio. You reduce the noise in your bloodstream so that stem cells can better see the tissues that are calling for repair. And then after that, we have Mobilize, which is four technologies to help circulation and capillaries. So we have natokinase to increase blood fluidity, to entrain stem cells and capillaries. We have nitric oxide producer to dilate the capillaries, bioflavonoids, plant extract, ginkgo, gotu kola, for the integrity of capillaries, and then the polysaccharides to rebuild the glycocalyx that will make stem cells sleek better in capillaries. So they're really designed, and they do work as a system. So when you release the stem cells, the inflammation or the signaling in the bloodstream has been harmonized. So now stem cells can better see where to go and circulate into these capillaries.
So take out the bad, what you know to be inflammatory, set the stage through mindfulness practices for your mind to be in a state to receive healing. Be proactive about what you're consuming and fuel the body with what it needs to optimize. Use a product like Stem Regen, kind of like an insurance policy on your future, and use it therapeutically. Yeah, I'm with you.
And at the end of the day, I'll leave it on this thought. At the end of the day, none of the thing that we stress about and that we're afraid of is actually real the way that we think about it. None of it. Look back at the stuff that you may have been worried about. It never happened the way that we worried about. So we can drop like all that stress. It's absolutely useless.
Absolutely. Don't believe the thoughts.
Don't give them
so much control. Well, I'm excited to report back on these as I keep going. I want to shout out your book. It's Cracking the Stem Cell Code. We'll hold it up. We're going to link out everything below. And as we close off, we ask every single guest these questions. So just rapid fire. What are the most common mistakes or misconceptions that you're seeing women make with their health?
I think we've talked a lot about it, which is worry too much.
Yeah, too much worry.
Too much belief of that thought process and action on it. Taking action on things that actually waste your energy, create stress, and at the end really don't add anything.
Yeah, I think that's
men too.
Men too, for sure. I think this is a cofactor for autoimmune disease.
Correct.
You'll come back to talk about more topics in the future. What is one way women are making healing and health way too complicated?
Same thing. Just listening to too many voices, going to like thinking that that little thing that we add makes a big difference, when at the end of the day, the basics is really what makes the big difference. You just summarized it a few moments ago.
Wonderful. What is your favorite ancient healing remedy? It's going to be tough for an herbalist.
beside meditation, for me, I like black butter tea. Salted black butter tea is like, it gives me focus, long-term focus. It doesn't create too much excitement.
Where do we get this?
You need to make it. I don't think it exists. It's Tibetan tea. So you take black tea. Any black tea would work. I like the pure tea. So you boil it for maybe 5 minutes. I know they say tea, you don't boil, but that recipe, you boil it for about 5 minutes, and then you strain it, and then you salt it to taste. It's almost like a tea soup. And then you add some butter to it, and it's basically black butter tea.
I'm going to make that recipe for the launch of this episode. Okay, if you had to pick something about modern medicine that really excites you, what would it be? Gosh, there's so many that you're
part of. Stem
cell research. Yeah, absolutely.
Stem cell research. And then I would say the direction that is taking more and more on things that we have known for ages. Hyperbaric chamber, ozone therapies, things that are simple. Honestly, we go so sophisticated with science, with medical research and medical science for a fraction. I'm not saying not to do it. For a fraction of the population, for the vast majority, the solutions are simples and basics.
I love that. If you could leave our listener with just one key takeaway that you're most passionate about right now, what would it be?
Let it sink in. We have discovered that the body has an innate ability to repair. You have experienced it in your life. You think it's gone. It's not gone. The body is an inability to repair, and there's ways to boost it. If we all did this, we would have a different health and wellness. The face of the planet would be different.
Where have you been all my life? You're such a great teacher. Thank you so much for today. You've taken like such broad concepts and made them very tangible. And I love that your philosophy really stems on the fact that you are your own healer. And ultimately, with stem cells, you're just remembering something within yourself that's already designed to help us thrive. So thank you for shedding light on all that today. Thank you for all that you do. I'm excited to have you back. And one day this is going to be mainstream.
Mainstream.
Yeah.
Thank you.